Hello and welcome to season four, lucky episode number seven. Mark Z started off with a big water bottle drop.
I saw my water bottle. So I didn't see Azale still. I saw my water bottle.
Did you knock it off?
I just kind of grabbed it and threw it.
I'm not sure.
Oh no, they're going to see I'm drinking water.
Clear it.
Get it out of there.
Yeah. Basically,
I'm not sure if the audio picked that up at the very beginning.
Well, I hope not. People just like, Toby's crazy. Why is he just laughing maniacally as this opens?
Yeah, they're like, what?
Kind of want to water bottle this. I gotta get it.
I have preemptively filled my beautiful dive cup.
That's
which,
the big brain.
You're thinking.
We're still working on merch options, I think. But we did have those little squishy ones.
I remember, one of the live dives, we were giving stuff away.
Yeah, we're just very altruistic. We just give stuff away, you know, keychains, squishy mugs.
We're anti-consumerism.
Yeah.
True, I like
Screw it. The man.
I watched Bill Water, or read Calvin and Hobbes. Bill Watterson was that way. He was cool.
I have the entire Calvin and Hobbes collection.
I don't know if I have all of it, but I have a huge, you know, like the indispensable, they're all titled like that. Yeah, I have a bunch of them.
Actually gifted to me by my first manager at Riot.
That's a great gift.
It was a great gift because I know this is random. Kobe's like, what are we talking about?
No, why are you always pinning this on me?
This is usually what happens at the end of a podcast, not the beginning. It's the random.
Maybe I guess I just don't know your expressions well enough. I need a guidebook so I can like hold up when I'm unsure what you're thinking. And it's like, Kobe is interested. Kobe is curious, you know? We'll work on this.
I'm honoring Bill Watterson.
Yeah. But yeah, I actually got that as a gift. It was a really cool gift because we had talked about it and we were both fans of Calvin and Hobbes, and I always had my wallpaper at work was always something Calvin and Hobbes, and my phone background was something Calvin and Hobbes because I've always loved it, and I think there's lots of great quotes from it too. And he gave that to me, and I was like, damn, that's a sick gift. I always remember that. Brandon Miller, I think he works at Epic now on Fortnite.
That's my honor.
There you go.
Brandon Miller. I'm going to have another honor that I prepared before the show, but he gets an honor.
Great. Let's tie it in somehow. There we go.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you want to go through with your honor report then?
Yeah, we can do them. My honor was, I think it was Niski, because Niski has casually established himself as the best North American mid laner. He is the best LCS mid laner. I know you guys just did your mid lane tier list. Did you and Crumbs both have him number one? Okay. Because I feel like it is pretty hard to make an argument for literally anyone else right now.
Yeah.
Obviously, Bjergsen and Jensen are the two that most historically would get that spot. But
we've had PoE second as well.
Yeah.
He's probably the second best mid this split, at least.
I think performing right now, for sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Niski has been absolutely insane. And I wanted to put him as my honor because I remember last year, so many people, when we would compliment Cloud9 and compliment Niski, so many people would be like, but he's got MVP Sven Skarren in the jungle. That's a lot of reason he can play so aggressively. That's a lot of reason he can. Well, turns out he just plays like that anyway. And yes, Blabber's a very good jungler as well and also plays very aggressively. But Niski's making a lot of individual plays. So I think he really deserves it.
I like that. I think it's a great honor because it's been such a given that the top two in our league for so many years is Jensen and Bjergsen. And the only argument really is about who's better between the two. And it's always kind of been, at the end of the day, people have always really said Bjergsen, right? And Jensen had talked a lot about, you know, wanting to be recognized as the number one. And very quietly, it's like Niski kind of just slotted himself up there through this really dominant split. And it'll be interesting to see if he can kind of get, you know, caught back up to or passed by some of these other guys who are really strong mid laners throughout the rest of the split. But it's a good honor.
I might I need to go check to see what I voted for last split. I might have been a hipster and put Niski number one for my individual
voting. I think Jet did too. Some people definitely
did. It was already starting to happen. But now, like you're saying, without the MVP behind him, it's like, okay, yeah, definitively.
Yeah, I mean, they're just dominating. Got a report?
Let me do my report in a second.
All right. So I have two, and I did one is tactical.
Okay.
For your honor?
Honor. Did it. That was my backup in case no one else said it. And not going to go too into it, obviously, but great debut for him, regardless of like not even considering he stepped up for Doublelift or anything. Just like as a rookie performing like that, it's great to see North American talent popping off. Woohoo. The other honor was Asa Doné for putting together the game show. It was really, really, really fun, and it seemed like a lot of people liked it.
Thank you.
And I won, so it saved my stocks in particular. So I really liked the game show.
That's perfect. That rolls right into my report.
Oh, okay.
No, my report is for myself because on the game show, all the caster team, we were trying to come up with the low voted, MVP votes that the polls for the audience would answer. And we were like digging kind of deep and we're like, oh, maybe they went with the MVP, a rationale that it's like someday because he hard carries his team and that they would just be screwed without him, or we're trying to come up with all these answers. And then we realized, oh my God, they just went with the popular players that haven't been playing well right now, Double FN Bjergsen. And I was like, that's ridiculous. You can't do. And then I remembered, wait a second, on the dive episode previously, I did the same thing and I put double lift by award.
Yeah, you're right.
Because I was like, these are just our mid split. These aren't even real awards. We're not giving anything out. That's probably what the audience was thinking about when they're filling out their polls. They're like, what is this survey?
You know what it was?
Thing?
They probably watched the dive right double. Beforehand and they're like, Kobe's making some good points.
Kobe? Yeah, that's good stuff.
So, I'm turning myself in. That's a self-report.
Shall set you free, Kobe.
I got burned by my own logic.
Yeah.
You know what the real problem was for the casters, though? The draft. You know, drafted the wrong casters. You know, I didn't get picked. So, I'm going to start with my report. I am sick and tired of people saying spring split doesn't matter. And I'm reporting a lot of you who are saying spring split is irrelevant. Spring split doesn't matter. Where is the sense of competition? Where is the sense of urgency and drive to improve? I think that it's ridiculous on so many levels. It should be enough that it's your job and it should be, you know, your vocation, your passion to actually become the best. All of these pro players are saying how they want to win worlds and they want to win LCS and they want to win championships. And I'm seeing so much stuff on Twitter and socials and YouTube about, oh, spring split doesn't matter now that it's not linked to worlds. How does it not matter to make playoffs? How does it not matter to improve and grow fandom and, you know, get rewarded with huge contracts, make it to a finals where it's like a stadium full of people and win an LCS championship, go to MSI, play against the best players in the whole world in front of literally millions and millions and millions of people who are going to be watching MSI online, potentially win that too, you know, springboard you to like international superstardom. Not to mention just being able to say you're the best team in the world at that time, which is an incredible achievement in and of itself. Like, how does that not matter? I just think it's ridiculous. And, you know, to say that TL making it to finals wasn't hype, that G2 winning MSI wasn't so hype, CLG in 2016 making the run to the finals, that wasn't hype. You know, Faker, his undefeated LeBlanc getting counterpicked and losing to EDG, right, at that time, that wasn't hype. That doesn't matter. That's all spring split. Who cares if it's attached to Worlds? Worlds is an incredible tournament. It is the keystone event, you know, the big event at the end of the year. But to say that all the regional finals don't matter in spring, the MSI doesn't matter, I'm just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I completely agree. I do think it's ridiculous. And that's one of the things why people like Faker have been so impressive, right? Faker, over his entire career, always puts everything he has into every single game of League of Legends. That's why he has been able to remain at the top for so long, because it is difficult to keep up that focus and that passion when you're trying to achieve something like this, you know, for many years. Obviously, people are going to bring up Doublelift. He's been playing for so long. He's gone through this route for so many times, gone to Worlds, failed at Worlds so many times. So obviously that's heavy in his focus and in his mind. But that's one of the reasons why Faker is so great, right? He has always kept up that level over all of these years. And it's incredibly impressive to hold on to that fire and be able to focus that much.
Yeah. Azale said pretty much everything I would have said anyways. The one thing I'll add is the community has a much stronger feeling on this than the majority of pros. Mm-hmm. Like, most pros still care. They still want to win. And it's like 90% of the fan base is like, yeah, spring doesn't matter. Maybe not 90%, hyperbolic, but a very loud portion is like, spring doesn't matter. And it's like the rest of the pros don't think that for the most part. And it's somehow become a popular feeling community sentiment when it really hasn't been said that much by people in the scene.
I mean, you've got to remember also, 3 out of our 10 teams make it to Worlds. for most people in LCS, in LEC, in these leagues, it's aspirational to even make playoffs, right? Like that's their goal. That's their big thing. And, you know, the dream is to win a championship in your region. That is an incredible achievement that most people, even people who have been around in the league forever, never do. And, you know, it's kind of like discounting all that and saying that doesn't matter when that is the goal of so many of these pros and a lifelong dream for them to be able to raise that trophy, right? And it does matter. That's the fucking game, right? That's being a pro. That's dedicating your life to this and trying to achieve that. So,
and I think that's it's actually a really interesting wider topic too, because if you look at the individuals who have lost that passion or don't think that it's important, that's going to be very difficult for your team. That is going to make you and your team weaker.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Sven, right? Sven has had this huge downfall over the last couple of years, but he had in every single interview, he was always talking about grinding. You look at his solo queue count, he's always playing to try and get back to that level. Because there's that competition, because he has so much to prove again, he feels like he wants to get back to that top level.
Mm-hmm.
Like that drive is I think a big part of why he's doing so well on Cloud9 now, because he has had to go through the last couple of years of, you know, building himself back up, climbing out of the hole that he kind of found himself here in North America, and that type of focus and that type of competition really does breed the best team. So just as a North American representative, a North American fan, I want all of our players, all of our mm-hmm. teams to think that not only Spring Split, but every single game is important. It's like if someone on your solo queue game is in there and it's my promos and they're like, whatever, I'm on my Smurf. This doesn't matter to me. Peace, game's over. And I'm sitting here, hands empty. Come on.
Yep. And I do want to also say this is not supposed to be targeted at Doublelift. And I also say there's a big difference between if you are burned out and feel like you need some sort of rest. There's a difference between saying, hey, I'm too tired, I can't physically or mentally keep up this pace, and
I want
saying,
to peak in summer. And
exactly.
Something.
There's a huge difference between that and saying these games don't matter, I don't care. Right? Those are completely different things. And this is not just targeted at Doublelift. This is just more like I'm hearing so much of this and I'm sick of it. And, you know, it's also, I think, somewhat different for me because my pro gaming background wasn't a circuit like League of Legends is, right? It was not a weekly tournament that is building to this one thing. It's like almost all of it. There were things where it's like, okay, online qualifier, you know, regional qualifier, worlds type thing. That was like our most close comparison. But generally, it was like you show up to an MLG tournament or an ESL tournament and you play that tournament and that is the thing that you do, right? And maybe there's a bigger tournament in 12 months, but you're not thinking about that because you want to win what you're playing. And so I get that that's different, but and people do need to protect their physical well-being and their mental well-being and be able to rest if they're burned out. But I think it does a disservice to yourself and to the community and to the fandom and to really the whole league if you're saying that, you know, half of our year essentially doesn't matter. And I think, you know, if Doublelift really thinks about it, I think he knows that it does. And maybe he's burned out. I don't know. I haven't really talked to him specifically about that, but I don't want people to just be like, yeah, sales roasting Doublelift, get him.
Yeah. The point, especially about work-life balance, is very important.
Yeah.
Because pros work is insane, right? It takes up pretty much all of their lives. And burnout is a very real topic that we've talked about basically since the beginning of the LCS.
Right. So we're going to move along to my report instead of talking about burnout.
True.
I'm reporting the TSM drafts. And I'm not reporting them any specific draft or any specific pick. It's the totality of their season as a drafting premise.
Okay.
I talked about this a little bit on JLXP already, but it feels like they go into each week and they come out with this new draft. And it's like, this is the Pantheon Taliyah week. And we're going to scrim and play a lot of Pantheon Taliyah in early game. And then it's like, okay, Bombi Cinder's buff. We're going to play Maokai mid. And I'm sure they put a bunch of games into playing Maokai mid and learning what it's good with and coming up with an idea. And it feels like every week there's some new, not cheese comp, but like really hyper-specific draft. And I have to imagine that's part of the reason that they're struggling is that they're always learning these new champs and strats and stuff, and they're not having the ability to just pick the same champions game over game over game and work on the fundamentals and team communication and these things because you're busy learning all these other things. It's slightly speculative.
Yeah. Interesting. It's an interesting topic.
Having coached, I know that sometimes you go into a game and your mid laner picks something for the first time that week. He hasn't played it. He gets blown up. And he's like, I learned this, this, and this. And the rest of the team's like, I didn't learn shoot because my mid lane was open at 10 minutes. So I didn't learn anything. But your mid laner learned a lot. And sometimes that's good when you're learning a new champ and new strat and figuring out how it fits in the team comps. But if you're doing that time over time, you're not actually getting a chance to work on team things. And TSM struggles the most in mid to late game.
Yeah.
For the most part, where they should be working well as a team.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Because so one of the first things they teach you when you're learning to design experiments is to test for one factor that you're going to change and keep all of the other confounding factors as similar as you possibly
can. Get the
control
variables down.
Exactly. So that can definitely be a thing where you're trying to change too many parts. This particular topic, I think, is also difficult if you don't have a lot of insight into what a team is actually doing, because it can be very easy to have results-based analysis. Like if they pop out with something new and they win, everyone's just like, hallelujah, genius, innovator.
Well, that's what happened with the Qiyana top game a little bit, myself included. I was like, wow, that's so dope. But then like what I'm saying is not that any one specific draft I don't like, because I think they all have their merits. But when you look at how many unique things that they've tried this split, I'm like, can they really be getting, can a team really try that many things and master that many things while also improving as a roster? And I feel like it gets kind of tough to expect a team to be able to do that. I mean, we had a week once on TL where this was like, right, we finished number one, summer split. Mm-hmm. We had a bye week. And then there was also a bigger gap between end of season playoffs. We had 3 weeks of no playing to learn comps and stuff. We spent a week trying to learn Shen Eve because I think we saw Rush do it. And we were like, yo, that's dope. Like, you can just show up anywhere with two people. They can't prepare for it. We just couldn't play it.
That is.
We spent a week trying to master that comp with like different bot lanes and all these different things. And abandoned it. We spent a week trying to learn it. Like, that happens sometimes. Like, you just don't get to the level that you feel like you want to bust this out on stage when you're crafting, like, your three or four comps that you're going to do in a best of five. I'm just like, can they really have mastered the Maokai, whatever, tank top, weak top side with the Kale carry and know all the variations that they want to know to feel comfortable playing it? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this kind of, I'm going to be, like, a little bit opposed to you here, I guess. And it kind of takes me back to a conversation we had on this show, you know, a couple weeks ago, where we're discussing, should TSM be experimenting in everything in the draft, right? And I want to say it, both of you guys were on the side of yeah, they should be, right? And if you think that you're going to make playoffs, then this experimentation is then going to pay off later down the line once you make playoffs and you have then established what works and what doesn't. So if you practice Shen Eve for a week and you say, oh, that sucks, we have to throw this one in the garbage, that blows.
Yep.
But if you each week are practicing something and then come to the end of the split and say, great, these are the four things that work best for us. We know them. We have the threat of bringing out some of this other stuff. Maybe your opponents don't know that you suck at Shen Eve and they're worried about it and they have to ban that out and things like this, right? And I would also argue a little bit that I think the amount of heat that the Maokai mid got is kind of ridiculous. I actually think it's a reasonable pick. There was an AP jungle, AP mid. I think it's basically the equivalent of running Malphite against physical mid, physical AD, which people did a lot when Jace was being played mid. I think it's very similar also to playing Ornn mid. It's like a similar plug and play style thing. So to me, if Bjergsen actually spends time playing it in solo queue, which I had heard, you know, another pro told me that he had been spamming it in solo queue. I haven't actually checked. But if that's true, I think you don't have to really adapt how you're playing that much from Ornn to Maokai to Malphite, for example, right? They're both like champions that are playing a similar role. You know, Maokai has very strong gank assist. Like, I think you should be able to plug and play that. I think it's fair to criticize, like, overall, like, hey, this draft wasn't actually good here. But I don't think it necessarily means that you shouldn't be practicing some of these things and experimenting. To me, more the issue with that Maokai game was, like, how they actually played out some of these team fights and the fact that
their bot lane didn't win with Varus TK.
Yeah, their bot lane didn't win. And then you played Sejuani, Kale, and Maokai, which are all going to be, you know, not proactive and not able to actually really capitalize for themselves. So if you go into that draft and you say, all right, we have a winning bot who's going to get ahead, and then we have this incredible, like, protective squad and frontline that is going to allow the Varus to then take that lead and smash the game, I'm like, yeah, that kind of makes sense, right? Kale is good into set. The Maokai is versus two AP people here, shouldn't be able to get exploited. It's going to be this big front line. And then Varus just shreds them. But when I watched some of their team fights, there's one that's really stuck in my mind where it was like, people are kiting back. The Kale is like on the side by themselves. I never once saw them actually like Kale out as Maokai is flashing in and engaging, you know, to actually create chaos and creating space for the back line. Like, I felt like it was more you guys played bad than you guys had a failure of a draft.
I for sure think there are multiple things wrong with that game. Yeah. And we could actually do a very long segment just analyzing that
Pull
game.
It up! I got it on YouTube right here. Let's go through minute by minute.
Yeah, no. Because kind of like we were touching on also, it's kind of how you're drafting around the new piece. There are a couple of things, other parts of the draft I didn't really like. Like the Tahm Kench, like the Braum is obviously going to have a very big impact on those team fights, much more than the Tahm Kench. And also the play of the individual players, like you're talking about, I don't think Broken Blade had a very good game on the Kale.
Yeah.
As far as the holistic point though, getting back to the initial report, I always remember this from like middle school or something. My teacher, when we're trying to make presentations for the class, she was like, all right, you need to prepare knowing that all of the work you're putting into your preparation, you might only use 20% of it when you're up in front of the class. And you have to be okay with that because there's no way for you to know, I'm going to prepare this particular 20% only. That would be ideal for teams that have, you know, a crunch time here where you only have a set amount of time to practice stuff. But you do kind of have to practice a bit more broadly. And then, yes, you on stage, you only get to have one thing work out of that. But when that one thing works, then it's a big payoff.
Right. And I think experimentation as a whole is a good idea. But when I specifically in this situation watch them go 0-2, 2-0, 2-0, 0-2, and they're just constantly fluctuating. And I'm not seeing improvements, once again, on a fundamental level, watching their mid-game, their shot calling, playing around objectives well, like I'm not seeing those improvements. And that's where I'm like, okay, let's get a little less cute in the draft and let's start knuckling down on you play Sindra Bjergsen until we actually control the game correctly or something like that, you know? And this is obviously, like I said before, speculative. I don't know how all their scrims are going, but it's something that I would start looking at as, yeah, we want to be able to play all these different styles, but we also want to be able to play any style because we have good fundamentals. And that's where I think they can probably start getting a little less innovative with flexing their picks everywhere and stuff.
Yeah. I think the time constraint is the interesting part, right? Because you have this limited amount of time. You know, there's all these things that you want to accomplish, but not going to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that was your report and your honor.
I'm done.
Did you do all both of yours or just
you honor?
I just reported.
You just reported.
Yeah, 10-minute report, like 1 second honor in true league player fashion.
I'm going to honor TSM for experiment. No, I'm just kidding. I can't remember what. No, I don't need.
You can take my tactical one.
You know what I'm going to honor? I'm going to go random. I've been watching an anime, Vinland Saga. Really good.
Oh,
honoring that anime. Check it out.
I need to watch.
It's worth a watch. It's like this Viking anime. It's like pretty hardcore. It's got some kind of dark themes to it.
You told me already. I'm a big fan of Vikings.
Yeah, I'm in there. And I've been finding that I haven't been able to like get sucked into a show and actually like sit through the whole show by myself. A lot of time I'm just like I'm bored. I want to play video games. And I've been in there on the show and I've been watching it and it's pretty hype. That's my
honor. I like it. Have you played Valorant recently? Because
no.
There's the big announcement. All capitals, by the way. You don't know if you can tell.
Does that mean you have to yell it?
Is it Valorant?
Valorant!
Or Valorant?
I think, Freak pronounced it Valorant. Freak is usually really strict with those, so maybe.
True.
We can give it to him. He did go with Nidalee for a long time, though.
Ooh. Yikes. But doesn't Quinn yell something for Valorant?
No, it's Valor to me.
Oh, I thought someone yelled some character.
Valorant is a place in League of Legends. It's the continent or something.
Yeah.
Runeterra is the world. Valorant is the continent, and then there's the locations within
it. I thought
it,
one
like Shurima and
I'm pretty
stuff.
Sure one champion yells
for Valorant or something.
I think like
maybe.
That.
I mean, there's a lot of champions, but
I'm probably making it up.
The Quinn thing is Valor to me.
Yeah,
which is
that's
burn.
Probably what I was thinking of.
Yeah, when she yeah. ults.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Zips around.
Sorry, I distracted you. go back on that.
I was gonna say because we played it a super long time ago when we were like, oh yeah, new game coming out. Maybe we'll cast it.
Yeah,
yeah, let's get some games in. And I had a lot of fun, so I'm excited for it to finally come out.
Yeah.
I have not done any of the internal playtests or anything since then though.
Yeah,
so I've had a long yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we're on the same page. I mean, we need to get back in there together. That's
Yeah.
I awkwardly walked behind people who were playing it at different points in its production and pretended I didn't see anything because I'm not supposed to.
Yeah.
So I haven't had a chance to play it yet. And that's the most I've seen. It's just kind of like
scandal, Mark.
Walking past in the office, like, who's that? What's that? Okay, bye.
It's a cool game for sure. It's definitely a lot of fun. I know, you know, Riv and Pastry and Freak, they've been playing it a lot. So a lot of guys really like it. I think it's pretty exciting. I was surprised that it was announced for this year, for summer 2020. I was like, wow. I just assumed that it was going to be pretty far out still. So I think that's pretty exciting. It's cool to see, you know, a serious kind of tactical shooter style come out from Riot, because that is something that immediately everyone's thinking of esport, right? And I think that's pretty cool. CS is a great esport. CS is really, really exciting. And it gives me a lot of those kind of vibes because it is a really high lethality game. It's, you know, very often one hit kill with, you know, a headshot from the rifles and from obviously a lot of the sniper rifles and stuff. So that's pretty exciting. I played a ton of CS growing up. And, you know, when I was on EG, almost all the tournaments that I was at, there was Counter-Strike going on at all the IEM events too. So I would always go and watch the EG team back with Nothing and, you know, and Storm and all those guys. So I'd follow that scene a lot through them and always had a lot of fun watching it. So I'm pretty excited for this too.
I hope there's some like just open tournament type things, because I was always, I was great at CSGO or CS 1.6, I guess, at Source. You know, I was on Cal Open.
Oh,
you know, I was killing it in the anyone can sign up league. Yeah, I never made it to Cal I, which was like the invite.
There's Cal M and then Cal I.
Was that what it was? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What did the M stand for? Because I know it was open, M, and then invite.
Cal I was invite.
I forgot what M.
Oh, God. I don't know. I mean, I always thought it was just like
middle. I was like 12 and I was terrible. So, you know, I don't think this is the game for me, but I'm going to play it a lot.
I played a lot of CS growing up.
I did too. I was just bad. It was I know that this is not the game for me.
I used to go to it. I wasn't allowed to play violent games at home. I wasn't even allowed to watch violent shows. I wasn't allowed to watch Power Rangers or anything. My parents said it was too violent.
Oh, yeah. You can grow up bad if you
see
watch
that lady
Power
throw that thing down and transform them into different monsters.
That's some graphic stuff right there. And so, what my brother and I would do was there was a local LAN center, so we'd just go there and play Counter-Strike and we'd play with our friends, but it was like $8 for an hour or something, so we couldn't play that much. But we used to play a lot of Counter-Strike there, and then we'd start playing at our house, but like one of us would look out for when our parents were coming just so we could turn it off. But yeah, played a lot of Counter-Strike growing up, liked it a lot. I haven't really played shooters, any competitive shooters, in so long though, since I was like 15, 16. So I'm probably going to be horrible besides that little playtest. But
yeah. I mean, last shooter I played was Overwatch for any substantial period of time.
Yeah. We played Overwatch for a little bit, but didn't.
Yeah. We had that one tournament we played in.
Yeah. We were slamming everyone in that tournament, and then we just, no one showed up.
We never lost the game in
How
the tournament.
How are you slamming people if they don't show up?
No.
Well, we won like 5 games, and then people on our team started being like, I don't really care about this anymore. Yeah. And so we never lost a game.
We
in the
forfeited, though.
Undefeated. That's your claim to fame for being a Valorant caster. It's just, we are undefeated competitive shooter players.
It was that, it's one of those, you know, like company versus company type.
Like Steam versus,
Blizzard versus Microsoft, Google, et cetera. Yeah. So we like just clapped up a couple games in a row, like 4 or 5 weeks in a row. And then the next week, people were like, we like missed the scheduled time to play or something. Yeah. Like, I don't really care. I guess we just forfeit.
I forget what the other game was, but some other game came out and we were like, let's play this instead.
POE, new patch.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
We got more global news though. Great news.
No.
LPL is back. Bad news. LCK is off.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little, give with one hand, take with the other.
You took a lot more from me, man. I watched a fair amount of LCK late night.
Yeah. So I had started to get kind of, I was super excited for the LC games to start, but once they did start, I found a lot of them were super long and not as exciting or even as intricate as I thought they were going to be. It was, a lot of them were just kind of shoving waves back and forth for 20 minutes, you know, and eventually getting to a team fight where the stronger team won. So I'm kind of excited to switch it up. I'm hoping actually that LCK can come up with a similar solution to what LPL has, which is, you know, to do the remote play thing and have safety measures in place where they make sure no one's cheating. You know, you have officials there as well. But obviously that is going to take some setting up to do before they can get that online, if they even decide to go with that
solution. Yeah. I mean, I'm really excited that LPL is back. I kind of agree. I found LCK pretty uninteresting so far this year because I have felt like it hasn't actually been super good, and it's also been slow. So if you're going to have slow games and not really, really high quality, then it doesn't feel as exciting to watch. So I'm happy as far as that trade. I'd rather watch LPL right now. But it is sad, obviously, the reason that it is postponed. It's more coronavirus stuff. And, you know, that is very scary for all the people affected over in Korea and for LCK and, you know, all the pros and everything. That is really, really sad. So I am definitely hoping that they are going to be able to find a solution and that both leagues are going to be able to get underway again pretty quickly, because I'm hoping that, you know, MSI and Worlds and everything going forward can be as unaffected as possible. Of course, they are going to be affected. And of course, you know, it's going to have some fallout there. But, you know, I'm hopeful that for those pros that they can, you know, be able to participate and have as uninterrupted of a season as they can.
Yeah, I think the international tournament is a big part of the whole equation of why this is such a feels bad. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, on a week-to-week basis, I do miss having these other games to look up and be like, ooh, this region played this champ. I want to see how it played, and I can look up. You have more stats. You have more stuff to play with, let alone just having more time or like more games to watch. Definitely feels extra bad when you start considering like, ooh, who's even the representative for the LPL? And, you know, people start talking about asterisks on tournaments and stuff like that. And, mm-hmm. you know, that whole conversation just isn't a fun compared to like, wow, what a great tournament. You know, it just changes the complete way that you talk about everything almost.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be an asterisk on MSI for sure. No matter what. Right. And I think that is kind of rough. You know, I think it really sucks for the LPL teams and the LCK teams, but also kind of sucks a bit for any of the other teams. Like if you're Cloud9 and you go and you have the best tournament ever and you win, people are going to say, well, it doesn't count. And same thing for G2 or whoever comes out of LEC, Fnatic, whatever.
Yep.
So I think that's tough. Hoping that it can get resolved as well as possible. This last weekend, another big thing locally that obviously happened is TL 2-0'd. Tactical mm-hmm. subbed in. A lot of people have been talking about that and kind of really hyping up his debut. You know, when I saw that Doublelift was sick and Tactical was coming in, I was like, ooh, that sucks for TL. You're 4-6. What if you're 4-8?
Yeah.
After week six,
we were like, they can only maybe lose three more games this split.
Yeah. I mean, it was feeling not that unlikely when you looked how they were working with Shern and how that didn't really work out. It's like, oh God, what if, you know, this team goes 4-8 and then has to basically win out to even guarantee themselves making playoffs? Like, what if the four-time back-to-back champion doesn't even make playoffs to defend their title? That would be crazy.
Yeah. I mean, It sounded like, oh my, as soon as they fix one thing, you know, Broxa starts to look better. He's been here for a while. They've been practicing. Now we're losing another part and they keep on being all these, you know, holes in Team Liquid. But those fears quickly went away, mm-hmm. Azale, because the entire team looks so much more focused this last weekend. And Tactical himself, I think, deserves so much credit for not only just performing well in these games, but if you also consider the added pressure that goes along with this, he had never played in the LCS before. And he steps on a stage with all of this burden of like, oh my goodness, like the four-time defending champ team are in danger of not making playoffs. If we lose both these games, then there's going to be, you know, hell to pay. And he absolutely kicked it out of the park.
He did great, and the whole rest of the team.
Ball.
Kick. Yeah, that's probably going to be. It's going to be thrown again. So the other team gets
sports ball.
Yeah.
He kicked it out of the park and right into the end zone for a slam dunk.
You can have home runs and kickball. Just saying.
There you go.
Saved.
Or
he's in recess.
Have you ever played slosh ball? Because that's
what is slosh ball?
Sounds like a college game.
Yeah. Anyways, please continue.
Yeah, I can just tell by the name.
Okay. True.
Where was I? Oh, the whole rest of the team played well.
Yeah.
Broxah had his best weekend.
Player of the week, hands down.
Yeah, player
NASCAR
of the week.
Player of the week.
Cool scan. Oh, I wonder what his scan is, because did he get scanned after everyone else? And did he already start seeing all these?
Oh, so it was an unfair advantage in the scanning meta for the statues.
Yeah. I'm hoping he does some kind of Hulk smash
thing.
Oh,
if he did like a...
He's got the whole Braxton smash thing.
I would be on... Like this, he would probably be one of the few players I'd be like, yeah, show me this pose.
Yeah, but when it's, he's got, when it's all small,
the pipes,
you know?
Your fists under your biceps and you...
You're just pushing them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's working real hard. He tore off his sleeve before he did it. So he's just looking, you know, jacked.
Should he act? Because the scanner literally scans everything, your clothes included. You so go. He could just do some ripping.
Go nuts. I think the odds are not high.
You guys listening, that, pros at home?
Could happen.
You listening? This is for next split for your ideas.
Can you get it?
Draw something on your face. You know, give yourself a swirly mustache with some markers.
That sounds good. These are good ideas. We'll brainstorm this. But yeah. Broxah, player of the week.
Yeah, that's right. We're talking about Team Liquid.
The rest of TL played very well. I do think it was impressive from Tactical. I know if I was in his shoes, I would be extra nervous because the community was roasting Shurnfire when TL was losing with him. So I think you could very easily come under fire as kind of the odd man out. So... You know, he performed well, but I do think it's really important to point out that the rest of TL has improved around him. Brox in his interview said, I'm finally not tired. I'm not jet lagged anymore. We've been getting practice in. You know, they had, I believe at the end of this week, like a week and a half of practice only still with Brox. So it's not a tremendous amount of time, and it does feel they're improving quickly. I think for TL fans, it is really encouraging, and I think people want to see TL strong. You know, even if you are a Cloud9 fan or a TSM fan or a FlyQuest fan or whoever, and you want to win the championship, I think it's more exciting to beat the champs than to have the champs just like
implode
and not even make playoffs, right? So I think you want to see TL at their best and then you beat their ass, right? And I think that is kind of really exciting. If TL can then really look great, if Doublelift comes back, they look even better, they run the gauntlet towards the end of the split, because I think their last game or one of the last games is against Cloud9.
It is the last
game.
So
that would be so hype to have
to ruin
TL looking great. And well, or Cloud9 gets 18-0 beating an informed TL, but you just want to see the high level of competition, right?
Yeah. I really liked, you're in the Team Liquid... Was it Squads?
Yeah, the documentary thing they do.
Mm-hmm. I thought you had a really good delivery of...
What quote? I'm very quotable. Which one?
It's just the end where you're talking about the you know, basically, like these teams, they didn't have to take down the champs. The champs just kind of fell apart or whatever.
Yeah, there was a couple things like that where I was like, no offense to FlyQuest and Immortals.
Yeah,
I think I recorded it 2 weeks ago. I recorded it. It was a two-week window, so it was even before... some of the other, like, you know, before Immortals was on their big slide, I was saying this and I was like, no offense to them, but there's no way they're the second best team in the leagues. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if TL is playing well, it's Cloud9, it's TL, and then theoretically it should be TSM, but mm-hmm. they're not. So, like, that's why I was saying it felt bad to kind of look at it like that. And hopefully now that TL is starting to gel again, the league, not be taken more seriously, but like feel like this is actually what we expected at the start of the split when we made those power rankings and when we were talking about what we thought would happen. It's like our standings almost look like that finally.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for every anime to have an equal villain or else it's not fun. If mm-hmm. the good guy is just smashing everybody.
He's OP one guy, that's protagonist.
Then you got Superman.
Goku's going sucks. Around like, bop, bop.
He's kryptonite.
We're done. Boo's down. What do we do now? I don't,
the one thing we have to acknowledge with this, though, is that Doublelift, replaceable. You can just dump him, put in Tactical, and you win.
Plug and play.
Yeah, it's plug and play with Team Liquid. There's no difference.
I mean, honestly, it's a really big thing. We started the podcast talking about some things that can be applied here.
Mm-hmm.
I think that like Double Lift as a person, as a player, is so competitive. I don't think it's going to take a lot to reignite some real burning passion. And he has gone on camera so many times talking about, I just want someone in North America to challenge us, to be that worthy opponent, right? And now it's Cloud Nine that are looking for the worthy opponent. They're cruising through the LCS, haven't dropped a game at all, and they're looking at Double Lift like, excuse me, please step up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, where is our challenge now?
Yeah.
And I know he is motivated. You know, you spoke about the TL at the start of that. Yeah, exactly. There's a little clip at the start of that piece of content that I saw linked online. And, you know, he's talking about how after the Golden Guardians game, the coaches essentially pulled him aside and are like, you know, the 2018 Double Lift is gone, where you're yelling in the game and you're you know, dictating the team what to do, where to go, and you were unkillable. Like, basically, you suck. You're playing bad. And he said, you know, he kind of agreed. And he talked about how it actually made him feel really bad for a couple of days because he felt like, I'm just letting the team down. And he kind of, you know, his TLDR, the conclusion is basically, I realize there's no point in feeling bad. I just need to get good, right? I just need to actually fix it. So I know he is motivated. And I actually had that exact, you know, C9 competition thing. Like, I had that conversation with him. I'm like, bro, you've been saying you want a good team in NA. Guess what? You're not the good team. You know, it's like it's Cloud Nine. That's your competition, right? They're undefeated. So go out and play, right? And I think that's something that can make the region better, right? You know, I think that's something that when you have a higher level of competition, you know, if TL is breezing through and whatever, then you know, it's harder to improve. If you have TL at their best and TSM at their best and FlyQuest at their best and, you know, C9 at their best and all these teams are actually pushing each other, you improve the region as a whole and you improve your chances for whoever actually goes to these international events.
And I think even just being able to take a step back from the team environment for a little bit and not team environment, but like from playing on stage and watch those games and see his team stomp with tactical and be like, all right, we're dope. Like, we can get back up there. We just all need to improve. So I think it's a good, like, losing Double Lift for a week is very scary for TL fans, but I think all things considered, this should make them a stronger team in the long run.
Yeah, I definitely agree. CLG also coming off of pretty encouraging week, you know. I think
one and one.
They got a win on the board.
I like the delivery.
could have won the second game.
You know, Poe Belter, though, I think Poe Belter was kind of the shining star, and I want to give him some credit. I'm gonna give him my honor. There you go.
I see it in your eyes.
You're like,
I want to give him an honor.
But Poe Belter has played great. I mean, I think he has had essentially four straight really good laning phases. I think he laned really well in all his games.
He has,
I think,
really high CSD at 10.
Yeah, both of these year games he started on were great. The Victor game, he absolutely popped off against TSM, really kind of took that one over. Even in their loss, I thought he played really well on the Orianna. He was making a lot of individual plays happen, you know, actually starting fights with shockwaves and things like this. So I think CLG at least looks like they're moving in the right direction. I think the season is probably too far gone for them to really, you know, get to playoffs or do anything like that. But at least it feels like, hey, okay, now you're building on something, right? Now you are moving in the right direction. And it is something where you could see, okay, well, if they can improve and the rest of the squad can step up, maybe something can happen in summer, right? So I think that's at least something encouraging going on for CLG.
Yeah, I completely agree. Poe Belter was actually in the running at the beginning of the week for our player of the week. You know, we update as the week progresses because we now have 3 days where they play games. Poe Belter had only played the first game. We're like, oh, I mean, if he absolutely pops off, if they had actually won that game, you know, there is a chance that, you know, he's in there with some amount of votes. But yeah, the Victor game was extremely good. I think he's doing a lot for bringing the team in around him as well. That's one of the things that CLG themselves talked about with this change. They needed some more cohesiveness with the team, and it certainly looks like they do have more direction in game now.
Yeah, that's huge improvement. I think CLG could climb all the way to above, like, this sounds kind of troll, but like, climb to above 10th. Like, they could actually not,
they could climb all the way up to a 9th.
I'm saying it's a big change from where they were in the middle of the split.
Yeah, so, where you were like,
it sounds really troll, I know it's coming, but it's like, that's actually impressive that you can climb out of a hole that was that bad. If they can do it, because that Immortals game, I thought they had it won at 31 minutes. I just pulled up the timestamp to remind myself. They kill the mid laner and bot laner. Only the support's alive, and the other three are spawning soon, and they could have TP'd in on a wave underneath double Nexus turrets to, like, try and end the game, and they just ran to Baron, and game went on for another 20 minutes, and they lost. It was like, I thought it was a one game right then. Mm-hmm. I was stunned.
Yeah, I mean, they're three games back right now of ninth, right, which is that four-way tie, actually for sixth.
Yeah.
So they are a fair bit back to actually climb into ninth right now would actually put them, you know, in this four-way tie, I mean, and in this jumble. So it's possible, but there is only six games to play and you're three games back, so it's probably pretty tough.
Yeah, and I mean, the Immortals slide stopped there, because up until that game, Immortals was on a four-game losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
So if Immortals doesn't start shaping up, they could be equally in just as much trouble of dropping out of playoffs, even though there are, like you said, you know, four people below them tied at six. Like, that's still only one game back from the tie at third.
So speaking of that clump, so there's the four-way tie, 4-6, right? Mm-hmm. If you have to pick one team that's going to be your final playoff team, that's going to be your sixth place team, who is it?
I'm going to go with the Evil Geniuses.
You're crazy.
Oh, insane.
You've lost your mind.
because I know that, and I've been one to bring it up multiple times, where a lot of these videos that we've had with the players on screen, these interviews, have not looked like they are getting along. You know, Bang, Zazel, they're saying things about the teammate where you can tell, like, there is inner turmoil there. Maybe not the best, working relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those look like they're getting smoothed out, at least as much as you can, you know, make the leap, right? You're looking at gameplay, you're looking at them in the hallways after the games and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And it's not a complete psychological profile of the team, but it does seem like their gameplay, they have objectives, right? And they have steps that they're taking rather than more of a scramble. And you see random occurrences of, oh, Jizuke's in a brush over here. The rest of the team is trying to mm-hmm. set up Dragon and they can't now because he's not there and he just died. And then they just kind of disperse and walk back to their lanes. And you're like, that was a weird play, guys. how did that one occur?
That'll be one for VOD review.
Yeah.
Timestamp.
I think Sven Skaren is having better games, getting more confidence back to his performances from last year. Like I said, Zale really enjoyed that one.
All I'm thinking of, it's stupid, I have to say it now, though. You know when people are just spamming summoner times, like times on summoner the whole game? I'm just picturing people spamming like times for VOD review when their teammates are doing stupid stuff. It's like 24 mid dive, 28 Rift Herald end.
That's focus on improvement, you know. Mm-hmm. Always be improving.
Maybe sometimes improve. Focus on the game.
but Jizuke is playing better. I think that Bang was always playing well, and I was only concerned for, you know, how are they going to work with the rest of the team. So I'd say they're looking up and they have a shot at it.
I think it's a good way to think about it, where you're saying this is a problem for the team, but if they fix that, I think they're actually really, really good. And that's something that I think about Golden Guardians the same way. It's a different problem mm-hmm. where they lead the league in ISO deaths, and they had an 8 ISO death game, but the same way Doublelift getting solo killed in
their
bot lane.
Their problem is they suck and they die all the time.
But like, the fact that they're 5-7 with that many ISO deaths and they're fighting this other group, it's something that I believe they can improve on. And should they do that, they can beat these other teams. I think it's an easier thing to fix in a lot of ways, than like, oh, our team doesn't get along.
Just don't die.
I think
just
that
kill
it's...
kill them.
My point is
I agree with you, but it just sounds so funny. You're like,
I know.
Just like Golden Guardians. All you gotta fix is you're dying left and right, and you're way but behind all the time.
That was,
like,
that was the Doublelift getting solo killed, yeah. Bot lane, come to Jesus moment. But that was this is the one for Golden Guardians. That 8 ISO death game versus 100 Thieves where they were winning, and then they just start dying left and right. It's like, guys, we are awful at this. And they were much better... Mm-hmm. the following week. And I think they Keith improved, and they went from a bot lane that was terrible to a good bot lane that actually wins and makes plays and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that the team is doing a good job improving and fixing their mistakes. They don't have any of these, sounds like they don't have any of the problems that some of these other teams have where they don't know what their play style is. They might not all get along. Like, I think they have the best clear picture of what they want to do. Maybe they fail that execution a little bit more, but we're trying to project who's actually going to improve enough to win, not what's the power ranking right now. And I think Golden Guardians does have some of the most attainable things to improve on.
You know what's really funny?
Mm-hmm.
Their ISO death stats are so bad that even if they improve them 100%, even if they actually improve them to the point where they're not isolated, they're still going to be at the top of the ISO test for a while here because they have double digits on both
solo laners.
Both solo laners. So I'm sure that them and their fans are going to get really tired of hearing that because you can still say this stat.
They lead the league in ISO deaths. It hasn't happened in 4 weeks. Well, it was really bad before.
They only lead the league by a little bit now.
The gap is closing.
It's funny because we were talking about this before and we're like, oh, well, like, what if we all have the same team? I actually have a different team. I think 100 Thieves would be my choice out of that because of their recent performances. I just look at how the teams are performing over the last couple games. They just beat Golden Guardians. They just beat Evil Geniuses. That's kind of your competition for that sixth place spot. I think that we have actually seen Meteos have some pretty damn good games over the last couple. And I think that Meteos has won so much in his career and has been such a strong player in the league. And he was having really some very bad games, I think, you know, towards the start and kind of like middle of the split. And it feels like the Rek'Sai game he had, he was like absolutely just carrying, you know, going everywhere on the map and ganking. And it has felt a little bit like over the last couple of games, the Meteos of old. I thought, you know, even in the loss, he played pretty well against TL. So I think that spells really good things for 100 Thieves. Yes, they still have other issues, but somebody has shown the ability to take over some games. Roma has been an issue, but if Meteos is stepping up and they have like a really strong top side and a solid bot side that is kind of like a late game win condition with Cody Sun, which is something he has been able to do for most of his career, I think that they could pick up enough wins to be that, you know, sixth place team to sneak in playoffs.
Funnily enough, with 100 Thieves, I'm still looking at the same things I was looking at for this team at the beginning of the split, right? I don't think the story for me has changed that much. But I mean, even the positives at the beginning of the split, I was like, Meteos and Someday, that's going to be awesome. They're going to win a bunch of games. And they have with those players.
And I would say Stunt was a question mark too, a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's really good mechanically. He can make plays, but sometimes he just does something that gets him killed. Team Liquid game, pops off Yumi, dead level one.
Yeah, that was a little bit tough.
It was a little cheesy.
They got cheesed out of the brush.
Yeah.
So it's like, maybe he could have done something, but he was detached to help push the wave when they assumed TL is leashing. So that one I'm not going to really blame him for.
Yeah.
But I do agree, your point still stands. You know, at times he's kind of making some silly choices, but mechanically he is very good. And you know, again, this is for sixth place. It's not, do I think any of these teams can win? Because I just don't think that with Ryoma or Aika or a couple of these mid laners, they feel too far below the best mids in the league to be able to likely win a championship, right? And that's why I think the discussion is, can you make playoffs, not can you win the split? Because I just think you need to have a really high-level mid laner in this game to win.
And that's why I'm surprised none of us picked Dignitas out of this group. Why is it that you think we're all?
I like how you surprise yourself too.
Well, I was like, I'm gonna say Golden Guardians. Yeah. This will be the secret. Like, no, everyone's gonna say Dignitas, and then you say EG, and I'm like, what? And then he says 100 Thieves. I'm like, wait.
So I mean,
what is it that's souring them? In
Dig
our
is 2-7 in their last 9. Right, things just aren't working. I think that Froggen had a great start to the split, and everyone was really hyped up about how Froggen's dominating and taking over these games and solo winning them, and it hasn't felt like we have seen that over the last number of weeks. They are still kind of, I think, plagued by some of their issues. Their bot lane is like pretty up and down. I think Afro isn't having his best split. You know, we're seeing some major mistakes, and Huni is kind of up and down too. It just doesn't feel like they're really working that well together. I think that some of the concerns around Greg have shown, I think, that they are reasonable concerns. I think you need to have like a really aggressive dominant jungler and play topside 2v2. Like if Dignitas was playing more like how TSM was playing with Broken Blade and Dardock with Huni and an aggressive jungler, I would have more confidence in their ability to do that. But that's not working. Froggen isn't taking over the games anymore. and I don't have a tremendous amount of faith in Afro and Johnson to be your win condition. So then it's kind of like, well, then you're kind of all over the place.
Yeah, and I think a large part of it too is that initial 3-0 that got everyone hyped, when you look back on it, it actually isn't that crazy impressive for what we knew now, which is like, okay, you beat CLG, who with Crown were awful.
Yeah.
And then you beat EG, who were struggling really hard and are super up and down. And then you beat TL without Broxa, who ended up just being terrible as well.
I think that's a good point. Because at the start of the season, those were potentially people's
top three,
top four. Those
are all mid-tier teams with also, you know, Team Liquid supposed to be really good. And they actually all were really, really struggling during that time period. And we're all like 0-4 or 1-3 or whatever.
I like this discussion on these teams so much. I want to pull ahead one of our Twitter questions that I liked, which was from Reggie. And he says, Adazale, would love to hear your thoughts on who you think is the next to be the next LCS starter that's going to get benched after Crown, basically. Mm-hmm. And for me,
the flame segment.
Well, we're talking about these teams and each of us pick one to put into playoffs. And for me, and actually, pretty much all fans that saw the Dignitas Academy roster, they're like, oh my God, all these LCS players in the Academy roster, those guys are going to get pulled up real quick. Let's play a game here. You can pull up one player for each of these teams that we're trying to get into playoffs. For me, I go Lorlo off of Dig Academy, put him on Evil Geniuses for Kumo.
Okay.
You're
benching Kuni for Lorlo?
No, for Kumo. For Dignitas, I am moving Acadian up for Grig. And then for 100 Thieves, I'll move Demonte up for Ryoma. And it's actually kind of funny that I only have to pull from one team, like the Dig Academy team. That's where I'm making all my quick
Dig is just getting pulled
my,
for
my quick moves. But I say those three quick moves improve the LCS, shine it back up. Here you go. Brand new. It looks a little bit better.
Did you see my franchise mode trade that I suggested? It was trading the Dignitas Academy bot laner or soul laners with the 100 Thieves Academy. So you get Fate God up to basically get Demonte, and then you swap. So you get to keep Ryoma and keep developing him if you want to.
So you got mine plus one.
Kinda. Yeah, because then you can put...
Because you're getting Demonte for...
I'm getting Demonte for Fake God, but then I also need to give you Soligo for so that
He's just basically saying how you do the trade through Academy.
And that way Papa can keep developing Ryoma because they believe in his intangibles and stuff. And I have seen enough out of Ryoma that I don't feel quite as bad, or I'm more positive on him than I was at the start of the split. But I do think with three veterans in Cody, Meteos, and Someday who might want to win now and make a push for Worlds eventually. If you don't think Ryoma's going to get there by summer, Demonte has been to Worlds. Mm-hmm. Just put him in. He'd probably be better in the immediacy.
Yeah. Yeah. The one I'll use my franchise one as well. That was actually about Immortals, which, you know, is one spot up in the group. But for me, I don't think that I've seen enough from Aika. I know we've been corrected on the pronunciation, so that's going to take me a bit. But I haven't seen enough from him that makes me feel like really confident that they can make a deep push. I felt like it would be worth taking a risk on Crown. So yes, Crown, I think, performed really poorly in the 2020 season, but I still had heard so many positive things about his level in scrims, his level in solo queue. Last year, people were really, really high on him. It just doesn't really make sense to me.
I don't believe it.
Like how he went from one of the best mid laners in the league to the worst. So I do feel like sometimes in those situations, a change of scenery can really make a big difference. So even not just like dropping Ika, but CLG is not using Crown on their Academy team or their LCS team. I imagine they're paying him a fair bit of money and would like to drop that contract. A buyout is something that you could reasonably get. You know, I would like to see Immortals buy out Crown, see if that actually works. If it doesn't, hey, you have Aika still and you can kind of go back and forth, but like take a swing for it, right? If you get 2019 Crown playing on current Immortals with all those veterans, that is such an experienced roster that I think has the potential to actually go really far, right? If you're cashing in on that top three mid laner like he was kind of last year.
I like it. It's like antique shopping. You're going through, does this Crown still work? Let's check.
It's
actually broken.
I was a big thrifter in high school.
We'll keep Aika in there.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what a find. this is our world champion crown.
It's a 2017 crown.
It works again. Let's go. I like taking that chance.
It's worth a shot, right? You got to swing for the fences sometimes. And I think, speaking of antiquing, you could probably get a pretty good deal on crown right now.
Yeah.
His stocks, they're not doing so well.
Not so hot.
It's a good investment,
moment.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's a fixer-upper.
Exactly. Yeah. Still got some life left in it. All shit up.
Uh-huh.
All right.
What was the, are we still talking about teams?
No, I think we all did our kind of yeah. one team that we think
I feel bad we didn't talk about FlyQuest. They're just the number two team. We don't have anything to say.
We do have something to say, oh, Mark. Okay. You just don't have our script here open yeah. with our
wild card.
We want to talk about. Mark's like, what about FlyQuest? This is ridiculous.
Oh, I'm really excited for TSM versus FlyQuest coming up this week.
Oh, that was smooth. Good.
We've been working on our transition.
Yeah, I like that. That was
natural.
This is the new yeah. system. You whisper something in my ear and I yell it.
Yeah.
Nothing's a smoother transition.
Cody's the best.
So TSM versus FlyQuest. I don't know if the whisper picked
that
up.
That was actually good.
I don't know if the whisper picked up for the viewers, though. They might not
Something's
know.
Lost in translation.
They might not know what Kobe whispered to me that I blatantly ignored.
Yeah.
Anyways, your actual thoughts on this matchup, because I think this one's a pretty hype one, right?
Yeah.
FlyQuest, even though they did lose to Cloud9 and there was a lot of weight put on that matchup, everybody lost to Cloud9. And I think that FlyQuest looked pretty decent while they were doing it. Mm-hmm. For me, one of the biggest changes with this team now compared to the beginning of the split, they have such a clear game plan. Every game, it feels like to me now. And even though they have had some individual poor performances from players, they are making up for it mm-hmm. in that game as a team because their game plan is so good and because they have been focused. Like, okay, so Viper's on the Ornn this time or something this time around. He had some bad individual performances on Mordekaiser or whatever before. They play the team fight engaged. They're able to control objectives that way. So I think that FlyQuest look really strong right now. And I'm continually perplexed by what kind of TSM we're going to see.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like this will be a really another one of those good measurements where you're like, mm-hmm. is the wild card going to pop out and take down FlyQuest? Because FlyQuest, to me, are ranked very high right now. Yeah. Or is it going to be more of the dwindling spiral? Because TSM, I've liked so much. And you mentioned how we talked about it previously. They had a lot of success with all these champion select moves where they have Qiyana top flexing. Oh, Sett's in the jungle now. Sett's top lane. Ornn's in the mid lane now. Ornn's top lane. Which, like... I was like, oh my God, they're making such
they're doing
this,
it.
Yeah, all this flex picks. I'm loving it. Everybody's versatile. But it seems like to me one of their biggest problems is mid-game lane allocations. They seem to leak a lot of CS here and there on the map. It's just not something that really draws your eye. But every time they set up for a play or every time they have someone leave a little bit early, couple minions die here, couple minions die there. Mm-hmm. Nobody hears the individual minions, but once you get later into the game and you're down 58 total,
you drop too many pennies, it starts equaling dollars, you know? it's one of those things. I think it's also to do with sometimes. Okay, so I really like how Broken Blade and Dardock overall, like that kind of top focus, mm-hmm. but I do think at times Bjergsen is giving up too much to try to join in on those roams. I think the Zoe game against Pobelter on CLG was a good example of that, where he was actually, that was the Zoe game, right? I'm not confused. He played Zoe this weekend. I can't remember which one it was. I'll have to check.
Well, Maokai was against TL, and they also lost against CLG, so that...
Okay, so it was the CLG game. And it was one of those situations where he got pretty far down in this Zoe game, and a lot of it was just roaming so heavily, and he wasn't able to get too much out of them. So I do think that you have to be careful of overforcing one strategy or making it a little bit too obvious, because if you are always losing something, when you go for these roams, and your opponents are kind of expecting it, you have to be sure that you're going to get more out of the roam than you're going to lose. You know what I mean? It's like there is a cost to every roam. If you are roaming with the wave at your turret, you're going to lose one wave. You're going to lose a plate. You've got to be pretty much guaranteeing that you're getting more out of it. And sometimes I feel like they are overforcing a little bit on some of these plays. And, Bjergsen needs to at times be more selfish perhaps and put himself in a position where he can, be more of a carry later on.
I don't want to tangent too hard, but if you actually watch a lot of Nitschke's roams, he sometimes doesn't get anything out of it. He's had a couple Zoe roams where he like ends up top and the fight's over and he's just like cleaning up Licorice's wave or something. But he also finds a ton that actually net him benefits. So I think that's a big point for TSM and Bjergsen and roaming is like, these roams are the right idea, but they're not executing on them well enough, whether it's someone's not baiting the fight hard enough or whatever it is that, I mean, I'd have to really look at each roam individually again to find out what was going wrong. But there's clearly some disconnect for why, like, even when Nitschke messes up his roams or they don't work out, he's still not massively behind and getting hard punished for it. Like, that game against Dignitas, then he played against Froggen and he fell down like 30 CS, but like, hey, I got everyone ahead. His always seemed to work out better.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to say, like, similar to the meme, you know, Korean advice, just win.
Just roam better.
Just roam better. But, like, it's one of those things in the game that has intricacies to it. Roaming does have a cost. That's why a lot of the times you'll see people roam halfway up, judge the situation.
Go back.
And be like, okay, we're actually not getting anything there. But as long as your feet are moving while you're looking at the situation develop and you're constantly rechecking, I think that goes a long way in improving the success rate of your roams. And also, like you're saying, Mark, sometimes even with the judgment, you get there, you're unable to play it better than your opponents and you don't get anything out of it. That does have a cost.
And one of the things I'd say also that some teams, and I think Cloud9 is one of them that does this really well, is sometimes, like, a lot of times people are judging, okay, was the roam successful based on, did you kill a person, successful roam? Did you not kill a person? Thumbs down, right? And I do think that you can get so much out of, if you have vision cleared on this roaming path, like, that is such a big part of it that, you know, Cloud9 does a really good job of having pinks in the river and sweeping this area on their roam path. So when that happens and the mid laner goes into fog and you don't know where the jungler is as a top laner, in pro play, often the response is then, well, I guess I have to go stand back in this brush and lose all this experience and all this gold, right? And that itself is a really big win, especially if you can do that on a crashing wave, right? If you can do that on like a 2 or 3 stack wave, that's like a kill itself.
Exactly. And it's not all mid laner, right? Mm-hmm. A large part of it is because Blabber plays these aggressive dueling jungle champions. They go, they fight you at, you know, level 2, level 3. They've established dominance here. Now you got a, you know, clear way to roam around the map.
Yeah, it's definitely a team effort.
So FlyQuest, I really like PoE. Not a good transition. He played
number 2 Gragas, mid laner.
Gragas Qiyana, which is something that was funny considering CLG, when they swapped him out for Crown, they're like, we want someone who can play Qiyana. He looked incredible on Qiyana. He had a really great skirmish at Drake Pit. Even after getting his ult dodged by a Tahm Kench Devourer on his target, he would then like just was like, whatever, and just kept going through the fight and like wrapped back around, picked up some kills. It was really impressive. And I'm glad to see him find another aggressive champion after the Diana failed, because I was worried that he was falling back into control mage, because before that game it was like 3 Syndra games, an Ori, a Corki, and I'm like, yeah, you're incredible at those. I just hope we see more of what we saw with the Rumble, and then the Qiyana comes out, and it was a really great weekend.
I think it was Jat touched on it a little bit, but CLG was also talking about when Qiyana first came out, when PoE was still on the team, he was putting in a lot of time on that champion also, and when Demonte was getting all the credit, they were like, what the heck? We came up with that too. We're putting in the, but they didn't get to show it, right? So then you always feel like, why is he getting all?
He finally got the Qiyana game where he popped
off. All the credit, yeah. So I disagree. I think PoE is just an overall really strong player, and I like how much thought that he puts into how he's gonna choose his matchup, but in his item builds. So definitely worthy of being high up on your list.
Yeah, he's converting me a bit. I think the Qiyana game was a big deal for me because I was more willing to be like, well, the Diana game didn't go that well. And you played Rumble, but Rumble was disgustingly overpowered and people just didn't ban it against you. So like, okay, you're still a control mage guy. I think it is cool to make teams worry about this. Even if you don't play it all the time, if it's not your bread and butter, if you can bring out, you know, a physical damage assassin in the mid lane, that is something that your opponents have to consider in draft, and that changes the dynamic of that a bit. I also really have liked how Ignar has played. I think mm-hmm. Ignar has played really, really well. Yes, he has gotten a lot of credit, I think, for that, but it is very well deserved. He has often been the guy making things happen for the team, and I think having that proactivity is important, especially when you do have Power of Evil, who is sometimes playing those control mages that can't make things happen. And Santorin, to be honest, at times is pretty passive, right? So having this secondary guy that can make things happen on Blitz and Mercon and Nautilus and whatnot, I think is a big deal. And also, I think quietly, you know, laning with Ignar has made Wild Turtle play so much better. Wild Turtle, I think, has really, like, I'm struggling to think of any of those really big, like, oops moments, you know, and that's often been something that has kind of dogged Turtle throughout his career, is that it's like, yeah, everyone knows Turtle has the really good moments, but, like, what about all these where he costs you the game? And it doesn't feel like that is happening. So, you know, they have consistency in their bot lane. Their mid laner is playing great. The big question for me is still Viper, because I think Viper has not been strong. I think he still has been one of the you know, bottom couple top laners in the league, which I'm still pretty disappointed about. But you can have, especially when you're moving towards tank meta, you can, like, hide that a bit with some of the more defensive and kind of even lanes. Or maybe he can just actually step up and start really having some great performances.
And I do think he has stepped up a little bit compared to the first half of the season. I think the Camille game marked, like, the last time I can remember him having just some horrible mechanical plays that hurt his team.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, he had one on Mordekaiser. I think he had one or two on Aatrox and then this Camille game. But then after that, I can't remember one of these, like, really bad moments. And he's still not great. He still is usually losing lane a little bit. But to be fair, I don't think the team really plays around him at all. Mm-hmm. I'd have to check the jungle proximity stats, but it does feel like Santorin is mostly around Ignar and PoE. So I think Viper has stabilized enough. Maybe not to win a championship. He does need to step up if they want to do that. But there's some other improvements the team needs to make overall to really challenge C9, because they lost in mid-game skirmishes to them this weekend, not because, like, Licorice dumpstered Viper or something like that.
Yeah, I think an important threshold for them to meet with Viper is get him to a place where there's enough other weapons that the Riven pick is really scary.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you get to the best of five stage and you have that card as well, it goes so far. Because, like, even like he said it, like, all right, yeah, I had one game, but that was a Riven game, right? That's expected. If you have the other ones to kind of back that up, plus you have the, oh man, it's going to be a Viper, you know, Viper Riven game, and he, like, you know, pops off, it completely changes how your best of five thinking goes. So we can touch on Cloud9 real quick. I know that we talk a lot about this team because they're the best team, but if we don't talk about them at all, then people get salty.
We did talk about them a little bit already.
Well, I just want to add one more thing.
Okay.
Even though it's still the same, they win every single game, I do like how they reacted to the Lucian top with Ignite matchup, where Licorice is, okay, I gotta play defensively for the first few minutes, and then they lane swap out of it, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the times you can see teams on stage just get paralyzed. Like, what is this craziness? Lucian top with Ignite? And then they're like, all right, remain calm. Just swap out of it a little bit later. We'll trade plates, have decent money, and then you're like, oh, they're just gonna easily win again.
Yep.
So reacting and dealing with that.
You're stealing my segment. I was gonna cover this probably on the on the countdown.
Really? I was thinking about doing Lane Kingdom on it too.
Oh yeah, you should do I guess it'd be like a Lane Serfdom or like a Rebellion, because he's in the disadvantageous matchup.
Yeah.
He doesn't stomp, but he does a lot of things in that matchup that make it so much easier for Cloud9 to play, because Blabber doesn't go up there.
Yep.
And normally when a team is like, oh crap, they got Lucian top, we got to help our top laner, Licorice is like, I'm on the island, I'm fine. I trade flashes evenly in the top fight. I cut the Elise off when she's trying to dive me. I use my TP to actually help my team while in disadvantageous matchup, while I'm getting ignited. And then, yeah, they swap out of it because Blabber doesn't go top to defend Licorice. He goes bot lane to get priority to ensure the swap can happen right when Rift Herald spawns, so they can't use their top pressure to get Rift. Like, all of it was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's stolen. It's Ignite, Lucian.
That's why I said it before. my topic.
Plus Elise.
Yeah.
That is so hard to not just absolutely run it down against.
Yep.
And I was really, really impressed. And yeah, I mean, it's maybe stretching the definition of the Lane Kingdom thing, but I think it works, because to me, you know, what the Lane Kingdom show is about not just crushing a lane, it's about incredible laning performances, right? And sometimes that is being in a really disadvantageous matchup and getting focused heavily and just not dying, right? And that's your job. And that's a really hard job in some of these matchups. And when your team is doing well elsewhere on the map, sometimes the best you can do is just allow
down
them to carry.
Down 20 CS, yeah.
Right? And I think he did that so damn well. Backing off, I think his base timings were something that were really, really smart. You know, he had an early base where he's kind of playing out of the side brush and everything and getting control of the wave.
Yeah, that was really good,
too. Gets an early base off for a cloth armor and a refillable, holding his TP. So even if you do die, you still have teleport to come back up and collect a wave if it's at your turret, like if you're getting dove and stuff. But he never even needed to teleport back to lane and didn't die. And I think that is so hard to do against this type of pressure because Grig was up there a lot, and you are in this really, really tough matchup. So I was impressed.
Yeah. And the reason I wanted to highlight that for Cloud9, not only are they winning, but when teams win that much, people are always like, ah, oh, yeah, but can they play other styles? So like to highlight a weak side, really good performance, you know, something that we always highlight for tank players or like Impact is really well known for weak side play, absorbing pressure, that type of stuff. It's rare that you'll be able to highlight a weak side play or somebody who's starved on a team that has not lost a single game.
There is no weak side. There's only strong sides.
All sides are strong.
Yeah.
They did lose their mid lane inner or outer though for the first time this season, that game. So it was a horrible game. Yeah.
Terrible.
FF Disgusting. Go next.
Twitter questions?
Yeah. Twitter questions it is. You already covered one. We got the next here from Remixed. And my thing just scrolled up, so I got to scroll it back down. Question for the dive. What would it take to have more teams added to the LCS or LEC? Considering how there are LCS caliber players being forced into Academy, Demonte, Acadian, etc., there's room for a more competitive atmosphere just by increasing the number of teams.
I think it's a rough one because I already want to pull up some of those players to the LCS right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if we are deep enough to extend the league. The only thing I could see would be what if we merged LCS and Academy? Maybe not all of the teams, but you increase them that way, and then we still have more games. Like all our Academy broadcasts that we have right now actually become LCS games, and we literally just have more LCS games that we're broadcasting all the time. I don't know how that would actually work out, but I can't see just strict keeping both systems the same right now and adding more LCS teams.
Oh, yeah, okay. I see what you're saying now. I was like, what is the system you've cooked up? Explain all of it in detail. I think we're close enough that maybe we could squeak in. You couldn't do 11 teams, so you'd have to do 12 if you're going to expand. You would have some weak teams. I think you would have a couple dumpster tier, like whoever is the 12th place team will be really bad. But I don't hate it, even if that does happen, because at least more players are getting chances. Like we're saying, like this Dignitas Academy is like, who knows how good they actually are? Could they be like the 7th, 8th, 6th, 5th best team in LCS right now? Like, it's a serious question. And like, if that's the quality of an Academy team that you have, why isn't it just an LCS team?
Let's do a Mythbusters for LCS. Just pick two teams. Like this, ooh, people saying this team would be number 5. Let's put them in. See what they are.
Yeah, swap out their game against someone. No, I do think it's getting close though, and especially I heard a couple Academy players talking about how it kind of feels to be an Academy. It's like you do get to play on stage, you do get the experience, and you are in a team environment. And there is the Academy playoffs and whatnot, but it still feels a little stuck for some of them where they're like, I'm on an Academy and I'm an Academy player. And it feels like there's limited chances for them to step up. And just by giving more slots in the LCS, you would maybe see a higher turnover overall. And while you do have these bad teams, and you do have to worry about that and how much it impacts viewership and these kinds of things are serious, serious questions you can't overlook. I think it's getting close to like we have enough talent to sneak another team or two in.
Sounds similar to the complaints of people right out of college looking for a new job. And they're like, how do I show you my work experience in the LCS if you won't let me in the LCS to get my LCS experience?
Yeah. is tactical good? Like, well, I hope Doublelift gets sick so I can get some games in. Damn it. Yeah. You know, like, oh, wait, he's incredible. Now Tactical's going to have a team next year because Doublelift got sick.
So I'm actually kind of on the other side of this. I just think back to sometimes when I'm watching a league and say there's like four teams that are trash.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, God, I can't even think what split it was, but I watched a lot of LEC and there was one split where they did the division thing and then there was like two teams at the bottom of each.
Oh, yeah. They were like 1-6 and 0. Whatever.
Exactly. It's like the only teams that those teams were going to beat was the other one that was at the bottom of their division, right? And so after watching a couple of games of these teams just get stomped on, I now not only didn't want to watch those teams play each other, I didn't want to watch any game that involved those two teams in either division. So if you have four teams like that, and that is extreme, and LEC is very high quality. This is not supposed to be flaming at them, but it's just like, if you have teams that are significantly worse, it not only ruins those games where they interact, it ruins, for me, the games where they interact with anyone. It's like a disease.
That's
like,
why I acknowledge the viewership thing is not something you can overlook with this, you know, whatever bottom-dwelling 12th-place team supposedly is.
Because it's like, if you're saying, well, I don't really want to watch Shield G games because, you know, they can't beat anyone and I don't care, right? And, you know, right now, they're the only one that's kind of the outlier there because they're pretty far down. But if you add two, three, four more teams that feel like they can't compete with anyone, why would I want to watch those as a fan, right? Like, unless you're really hardcore and you want to watch every game, and probably just never going to watch them. And I think that just ruins too many games.
Yeah, and I think that's why I was saying I think we're close to it, because, like, if you took Dignitas Academy and made them a team, I think they're not CLG level. I think they're better. And so they're not ruining the viewership experience.
But shouldn't they just then be in the LCS on one of those 10 teams?
Right. Probably.
Right? Like, doesn't that just mean that the people did a bad job of building their 10 LCS teams if there's all these Academy players that are better?
Right. But it depends how contracts work and stuff. But, like, for a while, C9 Academy was also just pub stomping Academy. Like, if we just had one extra team in the LCS who this was, I know that's not how it actually go to your point. Like, you don't just take this team and all five contracts end up somewhere else. Yeah. Now they're this team.
You can't always get all those players, right?
Right, you can't. But there does seem almost enough talent to just build another team. Yeah. And you never know what's going to work, because CLG wasn't supposed to be this bad either. It's not like they're untalented. Mm-hmm. It's just it doesn't work. And so it does feel like there's at least enough talent to build an 11th team. Is there enough talent to build a 12th team? And if the answer is yes, you're still going to get those dumpster games, like you're saying, because synergy didn't work, not a talent thing.
Yeah. So, and like going back to my original answer, I don't think we're there right now. The 12th question, I don't think we have the concentration.
I think we're a little short, but we're getting close, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe if we've got another question here. I don't even know how to say this name. Spedula? I don't know. I'm sure that's horrible. I brutalized
Spedgel. I don't know.
Okay. Well, anyway, he says, could my Clash team beat a Korean pro team if we played on the European server? We would play from Europe. Meanwhile, they would be in Korea and suffer from 300 plus ping. So since we don't know your ranking, I'm going to pose this question. What elo would does a team to have to be able to beat a pro team given they have a 300 ping disadvantage? So we're saying zero ping, you're on land, they have 300. What elo?
300?
300 ping.
I'm trying to think if I've ever played. I have played from Europe to U.S.
300 is
well, you
wasn't,
think, well,
it wasn't 300.
Well, you think I have a couple follow-up questions that will change my answer.
Okay.
How experienced is this pro team at playing on 300 ping?
First time.
Oh, geez.
They're just stepping out. Because why are they practicing to play against your
I don't know. It's a hypothetical. Why are they playing this Clash team anyway?
They don't care. They're just big elitists.
Here's what I was going to say.
They can win anyway.
Quas got really high challenger, like top 50 challenger. I think he was even top 10 maybe, with 250 ping from Venezuela.
Was it that bad?
It was that bad.
That's really impressive.
He played Swain, mm-hmm. and it was a point and click champion. He was the Swain god, and he rode that all the way to, like, I think it was top 50. It might have been even top 10. If this pro team is playing on 300 ping all the time, and you have basically five Quasses against five challenger players, I think, like, they could even win because they just understand the game better, to the point where, like, you're not going to stomp me hard enough in lane. I'm going to pick easy champs like Maokai and, like, non-mechanical things, and maybe I can even win.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that. I actually do think you make a really good point about being used to the ping. I think that actually is a huge point. Because so I when I played from Canada, back when the U.S. servers were
West.
In L.A., I played with 150, 180 ping. And in my first season, I got diamond, and I was like, this isn't that big of a deal. But last time I played on that ping after being used to 60, and then 60, people complain about that too. But the difference between 60 and 180, I was like, I can't even play this game. Like, this is horrible. It just felt so bad. And, you know, when I used to play WoW, it was the same thing because I played East Coast to West Coast at like US, right, to play on BG9. And I played with horrible ping and I was used to it. And I'm just like, yeah, there's certain things I can't do that you can do, but that's okay. I just like adapt to it. But if it's your first time, I think you get blasted. I think think 300 ping, if you're used to playing 10 ping all the time and it's first game Korean Pro Team, I think you could beat them if you're like high diamond.
Because you still try the things that you think you can do.
Yeah. I'm Elysian Insect you. Oh wait, I physically can't.
But I'm not taking even with that anyone below diamond.
Yeah, you have to go through the stages of poor ping. First is outrage. The Blitzcrank hit me. What the hell? I thought then you have to have acceptance.
Yeah.
And then you have to come up with your solutions afterwards. Like, I am back to Udyr only.
Yeah.
I also think it's also how hard are they trying? Like, if this is like some tournament for $1 million, I think this pro team is try-harding. And
they don't get to practice, Mark.
Right.
It's life or death.
I know. I'm just saying that, like, there's a lot of factors.
They'll delete their LOL account. They'll lose all their skins.
Maybe
I'm
just
Mark.
No fun, but I feel
which
like
is the equivalent of death.
I was like, I'm definitely going to lose if I have that much pressure.
I was going to say, it does feel like there's a lot more factors, and maybe I'm just anti-fun than the ping, but I'm like, does this team care? Are they practiced on it? Because if they care and they're practiced on 300 ping, diamond players will still lose.
The only solution, Mark, you hire a Korean pro team to go up against this man's Clash team. Fly his Clash team out to Europe. We're going to figure this out.
Not on my dime.
Yeah, I was going to say, who's going to sponsor
Mark,
this?
Mark's going to pay for
no,
it.
No, I just said I'm not.
Mark from Hotline League.
Yeah, Hotline League.
Travis will do it.
Yeah, Travis will do it.
He wasn't like Kobe get a cat. How's he?
Report. Were you watching Hotline League last night? We both were petting our cats and we're like, where's Kobe's cat?
I got scratched by my cat though, so I felt kind of like, ooh, that was not a good endorsement.
We do have an update for Cat for Kobe. Okay. Cole is on board with the movement, so we may be getting somewhere.
You've got
that's
numbers.
A big step.
You've got numbers.
Yeah.
Do you still want a cat? This was a discussion that came up on Hotline League. We weren't sure.
What?
Like, I just didn't know like where you were at. I'm not saying
like
you don't.
Did it become a meme?
Yeah, like, or was it just a joke? Or is this like an impassioned cry for help?
This is not a joke, Azale.
This is
I need a pet.
Kobe needs a cat. So we're with you then. Yeah, yeah. I was showcasing the beauty of pets. So was Mark.
And trying to get Travis in the mood.
We're at him from all sides. We're coming at him. We're like, look how cute this animal is.
I feel like he's cracking. I see the crack.
I appreciate it. Well, I feel like he's definitely going to crack now. Nicole is on my side.
Yeah. Yep. Almost every caller for Hotline League, their name was just Cat for Kobe, Cat for Kobe 2.
As soon as they got picked, they would change their name.
Cat for Kobe 3.
And then Travis would be like, you want to say anything on the way out? And they're like, Cat for Kobe.
Yeah. You know, he was complaining to me about having to censor
the movement.
Yeah, he actually had to ban the term Cat for Kobe in Twitch chat.
When is he going to learn that doesn't stop people? It just makes them more creative.
Exactly. I like it.
They start using emotes, like a cat emote with a heart and like, I don't know, to write Kobe's name in then.
Mm-hmm. On that note, we're going to end the dive. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you also for supporting me, Cat for Kobe movements. Tune in 1:30 on Saturday for the LCS. Please join us then. We'll have a new countdown. There are only 3 weeks left until playoffs, which is actually crazy. Time really flies. I feel like we just started again and we're almost going to be at Worlds.
Time flies. We're having fun.
We're at Worlds already?
That's what I feel
like. Is
this
summer?
Cat for Kobe.